listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Alistair McLeod. Alistair writes a very insightful weekly letter every Thursday. You can go to Gold Money, go to the research page at goldmoney.com to download Alistair's latest thoughts on the markets, and they are very weighty thoughts, and I think he really delves into the nuts and bolts and, you know, what the underlying dynamics are. And so if you really care about not just what is happening, but why things are happening, so you can sort of understand and plan for the future, I think this is really, it's a must read for me, and I think any serious investor that understands free market economics would see it that way. I've titled today's show, Between a Rock and a Hard Place, Can the Fed Escape the Trap It's In? And what I mean by a rock and a hard place is that the Fed has put itself in a no-win situation by meddling in the capital markets to an ever-increasing degree ever since Nixon removed gold from the dollar in 1971. By printing money, the Fed has enabled the U.S. to run chronic budget and trade deficits that have now left the U.S. essentially bankrupt, especially since interest rates are negative in real terms. Until recent years, the Fed could depend on the net export nations recycling their dollars that they earn from the United States back into the U.S. treasuries to fund U.S. debt. But given negative real interest rates, virtually all the serious foreign purchasers of U.S. treasuries have now come to an end. To pretend that all is well, the Fed now is in a position of having to buy the lion's share of new treasury debt in order to keep interest rates from rising and equity prices elevated. They need to keep elevated equity prices elevated, more important than ever, because thanks to interest rate suppression over the years, investors of all stripes have had to buy risky stocks rather than safe U.S. treasuries to gain reasonable returns. And as a result of that financial repression, the real economy, the productive sector, has been getting weaker and weaker, while the financial sector continues to experience the benefits of inflation, allowing the rich to get richer as the middle class seems to be heading towards extinction. The logical answer, the right answer to fund America's debt, would be to let interest rates rise to the level that the Fed would not have to go out and print money to fund it. The market would buy it. That's what Paul Volcker did in 1980, and it brought us decades of prosperity. For reasons that Alistair can explain for sure, I'm sure he can, the Fed can no longer do that. And because the Fed can no longer allow markets to allocate financial resources, we run the risk of a major inflationary problem. To help us understand that again, I'm really pleased that Alistair is with us. Thanks for joining us again, Alistair.
That's my pleasure, Jay.
It's always good to have you. And before we get into this between the rock and a hard place topic that the Fed finds itself in, I would like to ask you, since you've talked about Basel III and the potential for that to disrupt or to provide some upside for the gold and silver markets, we find out that Britain has exempted the clearing banks from those regulations. Why do you think they did that, and what do you think the repercussions, if any, will be that they are not allowing those Basel restrictions to go into effect?
Well, firstly, the Basel restrictions are going into effect. Let's make that clear. The objective of the net stable funding ratio, which is the, if you like, the main thing in this Basel III, is to do away with risky assets on the balance sheet of banks being financed by short-term deposits. So that is the overall objective. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely clear that the message that the Bank of International Settlements got from the G20 is they've got to get the banking sector out of this enormous pile of derivatives. I mean, we're talking about, what, $580 trillion nominal of derivatives. Mm-hmm. So you've got to look at it in that light. Now, what they have done, as you know, America and the European Union are now regulated by Basel III. That actually happened at the beginning of this month, or in the EU's case, the end of the last month. So that's happened. The UK is going to adopt these regulations at the beginning of next year. January the 2nd, 2022 mm-hmm. is the actual date. Now, the PRA, which is the regulator within the Bank of England that deals with banks, has adopted all the Basel III regulations so far as I can see. Mm-hmm. Well, certainly where they matter. There is one exception, and that is a clause which is Article 428F, if you really want to know the details, paragraph mm-hmm. 1, which permits the operation of the London Precious Metals Clearing Limited and its owners to continue acting as a central counterparty following the introduction of the net stable funding rules. And it is subject to the prudential regulatory authority granting permission to each of the banks involved with it. Now, these are the four big banks. Mm-hmm. From memory, they are JP Morgan, HSBC, Standard Chartered, and UBS. Those mm-hmm. four banks can do it. Now, they're very, very strict criteria behind this rule change. And basically what it means is that the only thing that they can acting as a central counterparty is just to clear the market's trades. Mm-hmm. Now, every day, the unallocated balances will clear. They clear anyway because you've got a buyer and a seller, so they clear.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The only time where there is something different is where there is a delivery involved. Mm-hmm. But that, again, clears a buyer and a seller, but it clears it not by scrubbing one off against the other, but by delivering gold itself.
Right.
Okay? So that is the extent of the derogation that the LBMA has. Mm-hmm. The second part of 428F, the second paragraph, actually says how member banks of the LBMA can actually trade in future. Mm-hmm. And it's rather like this. Effectively, the Bank of England has said, you can continue to trade, but no derivatives. Mm. I mean, almost as blunt as that.
Uh-huh.
So they have got to do, if a bank wants to offer a service, an unallocated account service, or even an allocated account service. Allocated is slightly different because that's off balance sheet, but an unallocated gold service to its customers, then it has to have on the asset side of its balance sheet real physical gold to match.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
And that's new.
This is new. So right. What this is doing is it is changing the LBMA forward market from a derivative market to a physical market.
Mm-hmm.
This is a major, major implication, which nobody really seems to me to have picked up.
They don't seem to have picked it up. If I see people on the internet basically saying, oh, yeah, much ado about nothing, that McLeod doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm sure.
Well, that may be true, but I'm not going to admit to
it. Well, if you can be sure, if I thought that was true, I wouldn't have you on this show so often.
Oh, that's very kind.
So, but no, that's very interesting, and that's very important. Then that is new, and it hasn't had an impact yet, but is likely to longer term, I would think.
Yes, I mean it's difficult to judge the impact. I mean, the first thing I would say is that without the ability to print unallocated gold out of thin air, if I can put it that way, mm-hmm. This market is going to become more volatile. That is for sure, and I think any commentator would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, which I don't think people have paid much attention to, is that the reason these markets, both forwards and futures, have been allowed, if you like, by the deep thinkers in the States to expand is they absorb demand for gold and silver and platinum group metals that would otherwise go into the physical and drive the price of physical higher. Right, so the next question is the replacement of forward derivatives with physical metal, what's that going to do to demand for physical metal? Now, we don't get any useful statistics out of the LBMA, but if we go to the Bank of International Settlements, they tell us at half-yearly intervals what the outstanding forwards and swaps in gold are. And at the end of December last year, the total outstanding was $530 billion. Now, at the price at the time, that translates into 8,675 tons of gold.
Wow.
Now, I would certainly not claim that all the people who, sort of hold forward positions in the London gold market would continue to deal. I mean, I can't claim that at all. But I can say two things. I think there will be an element who will want to own gold or exposure to gold as opposed to exposure to dollars or euros or sterling. And so consequently, they will want to hold gold. Now, I have been talking to a number of people in the market, and I understand that even now, if you are a very large trader, very large dealer, very large fund, you could probably negotiate a figure of less than 10 basis points to maintain an allocated account through a bullion bank in the London market.
Mm-hmm.
So this basically, it seems to me what's going to happen is that the replacement of physical for forward deals is likely to lead to at least, and I think it's probably a reasonable assessment, at least half that 8,675 tons being demanded in London to replace them. So this is going to create demand for physical gold. Now, at what price this is likely to be supplied in the market remains to be seen.
Sure.
But you see that this is a very, very important development.
Very, very significant. Yeah, because a lot of people think they own gold when they just own the paper gold, and they're not even aware, I think, that they're not really owning the real thing. So.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. The other thing which is interesting is the potential effect on ETFs. I mean, the ETFs like GLD, for example. If you have got bullion banks in London pushing an allocated service, or what amounts to an allocated service, or call it a pooled service, if you like, then, at a figure, say, between 10 and 20 basis points, depending how big you are, this is considerably cheaper than owning ETFs where you've got, all the fees of a structure, including
sure.
management fees and so on and so forth. So, that's going to be an interesting effect on the ETF market.
Mm-hmm.
So all in all, I wouldn't dismiss this change.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is very important. Now, the reason that it is being introduced this way is that the banking community, if I can call it that, in the UK has to have time to adjust, their, let's say, their treasury policies and their business plans for the new regulations. So what they're getting is pretty well finalized regulations presented 6 months early so that they can plan for
mm-hmm.
this event.
Oh.
So that's why the whole thing is working the way it is. But I think this is major and very interesting. And, on a net basis, I see it as being really quite positive for the gold price and also, of course, for the silver price.
Yeah. And what about some of the other commodities? Not
well,
so much, perhaps. Copper and those things tend to be not so much paper markets as they are actual physical markets, I think.
Well, you still, that's true, but you don't have, if you like, a formal forward market such as the LBMA,
yes. uh-huh.
but you do have futures, for example,
yes. Yes.
And that's going to be subject to exactly the same rules. So I think that, the paper liquidity in general for all commodities, and particularly energy commodities, which is another consideration,
mm-hmm.
The liquidity is going to contract, I think, quite sharply, which again is likely to have an effect on the commodity markets, driving prices higher.
Interesting. Well, I thank you very much for that clarification, Alistair, because there's a lot of confusion out in the markets and a lot of people that were sort of licking their chops hoping to see an instant spike up in gold prices. It didn't happen. But I think you've explained it very well. Thank you for that. Well, with the remaining time that we have, and there's not a whole lot left, let's talk about the Fed between a rock and a hard place. In your June 17th missive titled Too Much Liquidity, you stated, and I quote, "Yesterday, the FOMC released its June statement, which only served to remind us that its members are powerless in the face of inflation conditions. They refuse to accept the price consequences of monetary inflation, still clinging on to an increasingly untenable hope that price rises are transitory," end of quote. Now, I notice, Alistair, that the Treasury markets have gotten stronger. Interest rates have been going down recently, the last couple of weeks anyway, prompting some people like Jim Rickards and others to say, well, no, I think maybe it is transitory. Can't you see what's happening? Treasuries wouldn't be going up in value and interest rates down if we were heading towards inflation. What do you say to that argument?
Well, I think trying to equate economics with the market is not the best way to look at it. I mean, the fact of the matter is that this inflation spike has been front run by traders in the market. Mm-hmm. They knew it was coming, so they drove the yields on, say, the 10-year, for example, up. And so you've had a quite natural reaction, and it actually came back to the 200-day moving average and has since then bounced from about 1.29%. I think we're currently about 1.39 or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely bounced somewhat. But the problem that the Fed has, I mean, you're right, it is a rock and a hard place, because between its QE, which is, you know, since last October, it's round about a short trillion, if you like, has been pushed into financial markets. And on top of that, you've had spending from the government drawing down on its general account to the tune of about a further $1 trillion. So you've had $2 trillion of cash basically jilling around the system. And the problem is that the big banks don't have the balance sheet capacity to handle it. So, you know, they're turning away big deposits. And yes, incidentally, Basel III says we don't favor big corporate deposits because they can walk out the door at no notice whatsoever and, leave a bank in trouble. So, you know, there is every reason why big banks don't want large corporate deposits. So consequently, we have a situation where, a bank might not turn away a deposit, but turn around and say, well, you'll have to pay us interest if we're going to take it on our balance sheet.
It's crazy.
Which is negative rates. So this is why the repo, the reverse repo market has been activated so strongly. I mean, they've absorbed, in rough terms, about $1 trillion, if you like, of cash in the system to try and keep rates where they want it, which is sort of 0 to I don't know, 0.25% or whatever the FOMC target is. So that is the rock and the hard place in one aspect. Another aspect of it is that, of course, they require a perpetual bull market. And we now have a problem that all the money printing over the last few years, and particularly in the last year, is now leading to rising prices. I mean, firstly in commodities, and it's feeding through into high street prices. Now, this basically means that at some stage, sooner or later, and I think it's going to be very soon, interest rates are going to have to rise. What happens then? The bubble in the equity market pops. What does the Fed then do? It can't cut its QE. It would have to increase it. Instead of 120 billion, it's going to go up to 200 billion. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't stop it, 300 billion. So you can see where they've got themselves. There is no exit for the Fed out of this difficulty that I can see.
So it has to keep printing more and more money to keep rates suppressed and to keep equities elevated, or else the whole thing just implodes, right?
Yeah, it's particularly to keep financial markets elevated. And we're talking about bond yields down, equity prices up. Uh-huh. That is why the pension funds and the insurance funds get between them $120 billion a month from the Fed in exchange for U.S. Treasury debt and agency debt.
Mm-hmm. With just a couple of minutes left, then, what we're looking at is really very much akin, as you've explained before, to the Mississippi bubble. It seems as though the Fed has to keep buying treasuries in ever increasing amounts to try to perpetuate the myth that everything is fine, everything is okay. Otherwise, but eventually, I mean, we had a 5.4% CPI today. What does that do to our real interest rates right now? And tell us real quickly why you think foreigners are going to start dumping treasuries, because I think that's the key here.
Well, if you're a foreigner and you see that you're getting zero interest on your deposits and you begin to think I need to protect my profits in the equity market, then, you know, you're already, if you like, in the sprinting blocks to get out. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. And there's about 31 trillion, incidentally, I think it's 31 trillion of foreign money invested in financial assets and cash deposits in the banking system. This is, not a trivial amount.
I would say that's right. 31 trillion. It was not a trivial amount. Alistair, we'll have to leave it go at that. Thank you so much. Folks, you do need to go to Gold Money, go to that research page, go there, read what Alistair has to say in great, we just don't have the time for him to reflect on all these important issues, but go there and you'll be able to understand in greater depth what Alistair's talking about on these points. So thank you so much for being with us again, Alistair.
My pleasure.
Folks, that is it for this week. Next week, John Rubino, Michael Oliver, and John Watson of NB Gold will be with me. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
NV Gold Corporation, trading under NVX on the TSX and NVGLF on the OTCQB, is a gold exploration company focused on uncovering the next multi-million ounce gold deposit in Nevada. With an aggressive exploration season ahead in 2021, a tight share structure, strong management ownership, key strategic investors, a globally recognized technical team, report coverage from industry gold experts, and a strong treasury. Visit NVGoldCorp.com to learn more on this exciting story.